Welcome to National Kidney Foundation's Life as a Nephrology Professional podcast, where we explore research and innovation in kidney healthcare. I'm your host, Osama Alshami. In today's episode, we discuss a recent publication in the Journal of Renal Nutrition titled Plasma Metabolites of Dietary Intake of Protein-Rich Foods and Kidney Disease Progression in Children. Joining us is the senior author of the article, Dr. Casey Repholz. Dr. Repholz is Associate Professor in the Department of Epidemiology at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and core faculty at the Welch Center for Prevention, Epidemiology, and Clinical Research. We will be discussing the role of protein and its metabolites in the development of chronic kidney disease in children, the role of metabolite testing, and methods of protecting kidney function in pediatric chronic kidney disease patients. Dr. Repholz, welcome to the episode.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. So we'll start off by kind of asking a general question. What are the pros and cons of a low protein diet?
Great question. So a low protein diet is currently recommended for people with kidney disease in order to delay the progression of kidney disease as well as its consequences. However, the current evidence is somewhat mixed on the effect of protein restriction on kidney outcomes. And for kids specifically with kidney disease, there's an additional potential issue of impairing growth due to not consuming a sufficient amount of protein and energy as well. And in terms of a con of a low protein diet, some people have reported difficulty with adhering to a low protein diet, especially in the U.S. when protein consumption is high and very much a part of our society. So beyond total protein, I think it's beyond total protein and other individual nutrients such as sodium and potassium, I think it's helpful to think more broadly about diet and more broadly about protein-rich foods. And the latest version of the KDOQI clinical practice guideline for nutrition in chronic kidney disease, which came out in 2020, relatively recently, for the first time they mention fruits and vegetables, the Mediterranean diet, and plant versus animal sources of protein. Although for the latter topic, plant versus animal protein, they concluded that there was insufficient evidence at the time to make a recommendation. So clearly, the community is thinking more broadly about nutrition beyond total protein restriction. So in light of that, in our study, we reported on the metabolomic profile of specific protein-rich food sources and their associations with chronic kidney disease progression. So I'm hoping that this research helps to improve the measurement of protein-rich foods of interest. And more broadly, the overall goal of our research is to build the evidence on dietary approaches to prevent chronic kidney disease onset, as well as its progression, and to inform future iterations of the nutrition guidelines for people living with kidney disease.
Fantastic. I think it's a, you know, very important topic for our patients, which kind of takes me to the next question that I had, is this concept of testing protein metabolites. How novel of a concept is that, testing those in serum samples? Because this is the first time I've heard of it. And how did you go about identifying the non-drug protein metabolites in your study?
Yeah, so metabolomics as a field is relatively new, and then the application of nutritional epidemiology to metabolomics for the discovery of novel diet biomarkers is even newer. So traditionally, our tools for assessing dietary intake have relied upon self-report of food consumption. So some examples of those tools are food frequency questionnaires, dietary recalls, or diet records. And these tools, although they are powerful for providing a comprehensive picture of overall dietary intake, they do have their limitations, including recall bias and social desirability bias. And by that, I mean that people may not remember what they ate in the past. And then another possibility is that people may falsely report their intake to align with societal expectations of what people should be eating. So aside from self-report, biomarkers are able to objectively assess dietary intake without the same limitations as self-reported dietary assessment. However, the diet biomarkers that we currently have at our disposal represent only a narrow aspect of the diet. So for example, 24-hour urine excretion of urea nitrogen can be an estimate of total protein consumption. However, you know, the collection of urine over a 24-hour period of time can be difficult for study participants and for patients. And we need robust biomarkers of other aspects of dietary intake aside from total protein, such as protein-rich foods. So you asked about the methodology for conducting metabolomic profiling, and there are many different approaches to do this. And typically, we're measuring metabolites in biofluids, such as serum, as we did in our study. And one main differentiating factor of the existing metabolomic platforms are targeted versus untargeted. So targeted, as the name suggests, will focus on a particular set of metabolites, whereas untargeted platforms or non-targeted platforms, which we used in our study, allows for the detection of a larger number of compounds. And untargeted metabolomics is well suited for discovery efforts of novel biomarkers, given the wide breadth and agnostic nature of the coverage of metabolites with untargeted or non-targeted platforms. And then in the CKID study, the study population presented here, metabolomic profiling was conducted by Metabolon using an untargeted ultra-high performance liquid chromatography tandem mass spectrometry protocol. And we were able to detect 1,518 serum metabolites. We then excluded some of the metabolites due to a high frequency of missingness or a low level of variability. And furthermore, we excluded the unknown compounds, so they don't have a specific identity. And then compounds that were related to specific medications. So there were 949 metabolites, known non-drug compounds, that move forward in our analysis. So we used these 949 serum metabolites and conducted a multivariable linear regression to assess the cross-sectional association between six different protein-rich food groups, so dairy, nuts and beans, red and processed meat, fish, chicken and eggs, and serum metabolites. And we adjusted for covariates, age, sex, race, BMI or body mass index, Z scores, glomerular versus non-glomerular diagnosis, estimated glomerular filtration rate, total energy intake, and dietary intake of other major food groups, fruits, whole grains, refined grains. And for each model of a specific protein-rich food, we adjusted for the other protein-rich food groups. And then within the analysis, the metabolites that were statistically significantly associated with at least one of the protein-rich food groups then move forward to a prospective analysis to examine whether these serum metabolites were related to chronic kidney disease progression. So we used a Cox proportional hazard regression model for this prospective analysis, and adjusted for the same covariates as in the cross-sectional analysis, as well as protein to creatinine ratio, anemia, hypertension, and serum albumin. And we accounted for multiple comparisons given the large number of metabolites that were detected using a false discovery rate. So that was our overall approach in terms of the measurement of the metabolites and how within our study we identified the protein-related metabolites.
Fascinating. Looks very, very interesting. And I'm glad you kind of outlined that because, you know, to me, you know, it's always, before you explained it, I had no idea how you went about doing this. That's fantastic. And so building on that, what were your study's significant findings regarding the correlation then between these protein metabolites and the progression of chronic kidney disease?
Yeah, so we found that 10 protein-related serum metabolites were associated with the progression of chronic kidney disease. And 7 of the metabolites were associated with dairy. 2 of the metabolites were associated with red and processed meat. 1 was associated with animal protein, and 1 was associated with nuts and beans. And these metabolites were classified into categories, metabolic categories. So 4 of them were classified as lipids, 2 were classified as nucleotides, and then there was 1 amino acid, a cofactor vitamin, a peptide, and a xenobiotic, and specifically a food component or plant-derived compound is a subcategory within xenobiotics. Basically represents exogenous compounds, compounds that are come from outside of the body. And then of those 10 hits of serum protein-related serum metabolites associated with chronic kidney disease progression, I thought there were 3 findings of particular relevance that I wanted to mention. So we found sphingomyelin that was positively associated with animal protein and positively associated with chronic kidney disease progression. And in previous research, sphingomyelin levels have been associated with eGFR decline, progression to end-stage kidney disease, and macroalbuminuria. And also the accumulation of sphingolipids and sphingomyelin specifically is present in glomerular disease. So there's some strong connection between these types of compounds and kidney disease. So the second finding I wanted to mention is 1,1-enol palmitil, 2-allele glycerophosphatidyl enothamine, or GPE. And it's a type of plasmalogen, and it was positively associated with red and processed meat and positively associated with chronic kidney disease progression, similar to the sphingomyelin. And other research has shown that plasmalogens are associated with FSGS in pediatric populations, and then also that plasmalogens are indicative of oxidative stress in people with kidney failure. And so clearly, again, the plasmalogens have some pathology associated with kidney disease outcomes. And then the last metabolite I'll mention is 3-uridopropionate. So it's a uracil-containing compound, and it was inversely associated with red and processed meat and inversely associated with chronic kidney disease progression. And although there's less known about this specific compound, it was previously identified as a biomarker of sepsis-associated acute kidney injury in pediatric patients. So taking all these findings together, we concluded that metabolites representative of animal sources of protein and red and processed meat specifically may be detrimental for kidney health in children.
Great. So I know, like, the case with a lot of studies that, you know, that we do, especially when we test things, observational studies, we want to validate them and be able to use it then as a recommendation going forward. So what do you believe would be the next steps to further validate and explore your study's findings?
I'm glad you asked this because it is an important topic, because the goal of our project was to discover novel diet biomarkers. So this is really the first step in finding objective biomarkers of protein-rich foods and understanding also the biology relating protein-rich foods to chronic kidney disease progression. So there are many future directions that I can envision to move this research forward and to be able to use these compounds in nutrition research studies and even in clinical practice. So as you suggested, it's important to validate our findings in an external study population. And the CKIDS study is a unique, large population of kids living with chronic kidney disease. And there aren't many studies like that. My group has previously examined protein markers of in an adult study populations, both consisting of generally healthy adults as well as adults living with kidney disease. So that's one point. So secondly, I think it's important to develop quantitative assays of candidate diet biomarkers. So the metabolomics platform that we used and other metabolomics platforms provides values for each metabolite in relative units. Ultimately, we would like to be able to relate a value for a given diet biomarker to a precise amount of protein intake. So this is why we need these quantitative assays. And then that will allow us to determine whether an individual or a population is consuming the protein-rich food at the recommended level for kidney health. Then I'd like to mention that, of course, the CKID study is an observational study, and this was valuable in that it allowed us to collect detailed information on a wide range of protein-rich foods. Of course, with an observational study design, we cannot rule out the possibility of residual confounding, despite the fact that the cohort was deeply phenotyped and we adjusted for multiple covariates. Nonetheless, as a future research direction, it would be helpful to test these candidate diet biomarkers within a controlled diet intervention. So we have done some of this work, and we reported on metabolomic markers of protein within the MDRD study, or modification of diet in renal disease, in which the intervention arms differed on the basis of level of total protein restriction. However, it was focused on total protein restriction and not specific protein-rich foods. So it'd be nice to be able to move this research into a controlled diet intervention focused on these protein-rich foods. And then the last point I'll make is that it would be nice to be able to characterize the pharmacokinetics of these candidate diet biomarkers. So this broadly will help us distinguish between shorter term and longer term diet biomarkers, which has implications for how they would be used in the future. So diet biomarkers that reflect usual intake or long-term intake are etiologically relevant for the development of chronic diseases, whereas diet biomarkers that reflect more recent intake are more relevant for assessing adherence to a diet intervention study within the context of a research study or a prescribed diet in a clinical setting. So those are just a few steps that I think are important to move this research forward. And it is, like I said, the beginning of trying to develop these diet biomarkers.
Excellent. Yeah, I find all this work very interesting. And like you said, you know, it's the first step, and it seems like, you know, there's a lot of work that can be done to build on this, validate it, further explore, right, other markers or other avenues that can be used to further help protect children, right, with chronic kidney disease, and protect children from developing chronic kidney disease to begin with. So, you know, this has been a fantastic discussion. And I'd like to thank you very much, Dr. Rebholz, for a great discussion about your recent publication and the implications of protein intake in our pediatric CKD population. And I would say for our listeners, based on our study's findings for now, let's at least try to limit the amount of animal protein, red and processed meats that we feed our children. Of course, the study findings are going to be validated right in the future with further studies, but there's no harm in at least doing that for now based on what we've found. Would like to thank you all for tuning in to the Life as a Nephrology Professional podcast, where we explore best practices and foster a sense of camaraderie among the kidney health community. Until next time, may your practice be innovative and your research be groundbreaking. Thank you.